In this episode of Car Chats, we go for a ride with one of the very first athletes to complete our Mojo Mindset course, freestyle mogul skiing Olympic gold medalist Jacara Anthony. Throughout our drive, we discuss her journey to the Winter Olympics and how a girl who was born in the scorching heat of Cairns, Queensland, picks up snow skis at the age of four and goes on to win gold by nailing a Cork 720 Mute. Sounds like I know what I'm talking about, doesn't it? We then discuss the challenges she faced the year following her Olympic success and how she overcame these challenges and how she looks back on that chapter as one of the hardest things she's ever had to go through, but in doing so, unlocked one of her core values, which is courage. I hope you enjoyed the chat as much as I enjoyed taking her for a ride. Jacara Anthony, welcome. First and foremost, congratulations on your last few years. Is it all a bit of a spin out? Have you had time to stop and reflect and smell the roses on the snow kind of thing?
Oh, it's a fair bit of a spin out still. Things have happened quite quickly. As you know, time literally flies. Had a little bit more time this year to kind of digest things and process things a little more, which has been good to get a bit of a reset going.
Totally. And where to from? So, okay, so we're 2023. It's fair to say you had a relatively decent 2022.
Yeah.
Culminating in Olympic gold medal. Congratulations on behalf of the whole country.
Thank you.
Also, what was the award called?
The Crystal Globe.
I love that name award. Yeah. Congratulations on that as well.
Thank you. One of the coolest trophies, I reckon. Literally a big Crystal Globe.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Where is it at the moment?
On the bench at home.
Right.
Don't know where the medal is. So, Crowy, when yes. you're working with an athlete, where is it that you typically sort of start?
My favorite four words is tell me your backstory. Yeah, or tell me your story. And then you'll say, where do you want me to start? And I'll say, well, wherever you want to. You know, typically you're born somewhere and so forth. When you everyone's on their own hero's journey. And a hero's journey, like you're on yours, I'm on mine, everyone's on it at the moment, unfortunately, where interfering in everyone else's and all comparing ourselves and judging ourselves rather than just enjoying our own and celebrating our own and accepting our own. But the hero's journey is based on three chapters, and I'm going to get into yours, right, on this trip. Chapter one is typically all about you, and you know, you start school and you go out into the world. That's kind of chapter one, and you get recognized for achievement and doing things, get a gold star for, you know, your grades and whatever. Chapter two is when life gets a bit tricky. You know, you might become a teenager and get pimples and try and fit into a clique or whatever it is, or a tribe, rather than just feeling that you belong, you know. And we start having these crucible moments. They can be good moments that we're not making sense of, not appreciating, or more often than not, they can be bad moments, right? But either way, we need to make sense of these crucible moments in chapter two, because they're laced with meaning, and that'll hopefully get us into chapter three, right, where in chapter three, where we can kind of find our authenticity, we can find our bliss, we can find our purpose, our goals and dreams, we can kind of chase them down. Unfortunately, life doesn't work that linear, right? So we often go back into chapter two and work our way out of chapter two into chapter three. So does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
In terms of just telling me your backstory, high level, how does a girl grow up in Bowen Heads, surfing, passionate surfer, become Olympic gold medalist on the snow? Right.
To make that story even more obscure, I was actually born up in Cairns in Queensland. So, you know, from one of the hottest places in Australia, yeah, grew up down at the beach in Bowen Heads. But my parents actually met for the first time up at Mount Buller. They were both seasonal workers up there. So,
oh, love that.
That's kind of where snow it all romance. Started. Yeah, yeah, so they had my brother and I when we were living. Well, I was born up in Cairns, then we moved down to Bowen Heads. And then when we started primary school, there was a school at Mount Buller that runs just for the winter. And they decided we were going to go up there, spend that time as a family, go skiing as a family, put us in programs on the weekends and attend the local primary school. And that's kind of how it all started.
Love that. Love that. So how old were you when you first saw snow?
I would have been, I think I was four the first time I went skiing.
Got it.
So that's a little while ago now.
Got it. Yeah, totally. So what happened during the winter? Was it term three? Term three, your parents decided they wanted to do something different.
Yeah.
Kind of get out of the typical Victorian freezing.
to even colder.
To even colder, but at least do something a bit more practical.
Yeah, and I think they were just really drawn to skiing because it was something they knew we could do as a family. We're pretty big on family. We're a tight-knit, small family. And yeah, skiing was an activity we could do together from day dot when we were beginners and mum and dad used to be better than us to now where my brother and I are probably skiing laps around them, but it's still something we can all go out and enjoy together. So it's been really cool to have that consistency throughout our lives.
That's hard for parents. Seriously, it's the stupidest thing I ever did was teach my three boys to surf better than I can. Well, pretty much do everything better than I can. But so I feel for your folks. Yeah. When did you realize you had a talent, and when did you realize that you were something you might be interested in actually pursuing kind of career-wise?
For me, I think the moment that I realized that mobile skiing was what I wanted to do was we get introduced to all the different disciplines through a program called Interschools, where you get to go and try all the different snow sports, compete against other school kids, and moguls I was particularly drawn to, I think because of how many different aspects there are to work on it. You know, you can be working on your turns, your jumps, or when you get to higher levels, speed plays into it. And I also found that I seemed to have a bit of a knack for that at that inter-school level. And I was like, all right, I want to do this. And then a couple of years later, watching the Vancouver 2010 Olympics, I saw Britt Cox compete as a 15-year-old, and I was lucky enough to go on and be teammates with her, and she's just recently retired. And she was kind of the catalyst for me to be like, oh man, that is what I want to do. That's my dream.
So. It's, you know, what's fascinating is that when I listen to an athlete's backstory, there's often a person that can be an athlete or can just be someone else who has had a major impact, either innocuous at the time and looking back, or you kind of know, I want to be that person. So was Brittany that person for you?
Yeah, she was definitely the one that started that dream. I was like, she's 15 and off competing at the biggest event in the world.
Yeah,
and
totally.
That's totally achievable for me as an Australian because she's paved the way. And just seeing that, I was mind blown and just in awe. And I was like, that is me. I'm going to do that.
Okay, so picking up your chapter one of your life story. So, so you start following the snow.
Yeah.
Northern hemispheres all through. You don't really finish one full year at one school until year 12.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where to from there? When did you realize, well, this is going to be potentially my future?
Yeah. So I was pretty fortunate to find success in the sport at a pretty young age and advance through the different levels of our sport quite quickly. So I qualified to ski my first World Cup. I think I was about 16. I got my first development start in America, and that was the coolest thing ever. I'd watch these guys compete and train, and to actually get to go and compete alongside them was phenomenal. I was very amateur at that point. I remember one of the greatest of all time in our sport, Hannah Carney, she flew out and pulled across the whole course, which is the worst thing you can do in a mogul run, and she still beat me.
Oh, wow.
So I've come a long way since then, but finally getting that opportunity to mix it with the big dogs was the moment, like, all right, this is really going to happen now.
Totally. And then from there, and you started having some significant international success.
Yeah, managed to qualify the following year to a couple years after that to go and ski my first World Cup tour, and ski in the World Championships in Spain was my first time to Europe. Didn't even know Spain had snow at the time.
Yeah, totally.
And then the following year I qualified for my first Olympics in Pyeongchang in South Korea.
Yeah.
I was 19 at the time.
Gotcha. And I just missed out on a medal?
Yeah, finished off in fourth, which, you know, that was a funny one. All the interviews and stuff I did, everyone's like, oh, that's so devastating. But for me at the time, it was a personal best result, and I was over the moon. I'm like, no, this is the best day of my life. I am not in the least bit disappointed. So I still to date am so proud. It's my favorite fourth place.
I love that. Love that. In terms of, yeah, talk about perspective, right?
Yeah.
In terms of just appreciating the journey on. Weren't you also the number one Australian kind of finishing at that?
Yeah, that Olympics, yeah. I was the number one Australian. You know, it was interesting to be on. I've been on both sides of things now. So Britt Cox, my teammate, she was going in as the gold medal favourite and ended up finishing just behind me. So it was a tough night. You know, I was elated over the moon, and then to go through that with Britt, and I learned a lot from that, seeing how she managed that disappointment in the heat of the moment. Like, she's such an inspiration. I really have taken a lot from that experience.
Yeah, that classic, you're either winning or learning.
Yeah, for sure. Thing.
So you've taken away a lot from that experience. Yeah. Where to from there?
Yeah, so the following year, things kind of, we kind of set off a plan. We're like, okay, so we've achieved that at these Olympics. 4 years' time, we've got another crack in Beijing in China, and we really think we could go for a gold medal there. So we kind of worked out a four-year plan, what we needed to work on, the areas we needed to target, and how we were going to get there. And that all kicked off, and managed to get my first podiums and stuff on World Cup the following season, and get an overall tour standing on the podium, and first World Championships medal. The ball really got rolling pretty quick.
Totally. Yeah. And then the whole world took kind of like a gap year, yeah?
Yeah.
And 2020 happened.
Yeah.
Talk me through that a bit.
Yeah, 2020 hit, and we were actually at an event. I was at an event with my coach, Pete McNeil, in Sweden, and we ended up getting sent home. We're like, all right, this, what are we getting into here? And that's when the lockdown started, got back to Australia just before the borders closed. And yeah, that's when everything kind of went haywire for the world. It was a pretty tricky time, you know. I was very fortunate to get to continue training in a relatively normal capacity, could still get on snow in Australia, couldn't do our regular camps overseas, and ended up getting locked out of Victoria, kind of the opposite to everyone else.
Yeah.
So
it's not a bad thing, Jack.
It was a really good thing. I got some really cool opportunities out of it, but I really missed my family during that period.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I didn't get home. I think from when I had to leave Victoria, I think I came home for about 2 days before I flew overseas for 5 months. So yeah, it was a pretty tricky time.
Yeah, very homesick.
Yeah, very. But at the same time, you know, there were a lot of good things to come out of it as well.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, and you said that period that didn't happen, it kind of gave, it set you the foundation for working on a lot of the mindset related stuff, yeah?
Yeah, for sure.
Off the mountain, that then set up 2021 and 2022. Take me through those two.
Yeah, so pretty crazy year, and COVID played a big part in that as well, in a positive way for us, because our training facilities, we couldn't have any international skiers come out, so and the mountain at Perisher, we were very fortunate for them to be able to continue putting on some training for us. So we essentially got a private training venue, which made the most ideal conditions for me to be able to transfer this new trick that I was competing at. It's called a Cork 720 Mute.
A Cork 720 Mute, got it?
Yeah, kind of like another language, hey?
Totally.
The Cork means it's an off-axis rotation, 720, two full spins.
Yep.
And the Mute is the kind of grab that I'm doing, how I'm holding my skis.
Gotcha. That's called a Mute.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So it's a Cork 720 Mute.
Yeah.
Got it.
So.
Yep. And that's on the up ramp?
Yeah, on the top air, we call it.
Top air and bottom air, yep.
Top air, bottom air, and then you got a bunch of moguls in between.
Got
so
it.
That's the run for us. So my aim was to compete this up on the top air. And at this point, we're 6 months out from the games, and I don't think I'd ever done it in a mogul course at this point. And we didn't have any girls competing it on World Cup, but that was our real big goal for the season.
So who came up with the idea?
Yeah, so that was part of that four-year plan we worked on after Pyeongchang with myself and my coach Pete, and the input of my other coaches, Kate, and other people along the way.
Love that.
Was that we were going to increase our degree of difficulty. We didn't necessarily know that was the end goal at that point, but we knew we were working towards somewhere in that ballpark. And it ended up all coming together. It was a really cool project to have worked on.
Totally. Take me through the Olympic final.
Yeah, that was such an incredible night. There's still so much emotion attached to that whole experience. And for me, a weird concept, it was actually probably the least nervous, stressful competition that I've had the actual night.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think a lot of that is to do with the preparation that went into it. Especially that last year leading into those Olympics, literally no stone left unturned by myself or any of my team around me. We ticked every box there was to tick. So and it wasn't easy. It was bloody tough to get
totally.
Me wrong. But that meant that by the time we got to the Olympics, I was literally like, I've done everything. All that's left to do is go and execute. So it was actually the least stressful part of the season. I was
so
like,
good.
There is nothing left I can do now that is going to change what is going to happen on that night. It's going to be what it's going to be. And I'm going to be okay with that, which was a really cool feeling to have had.
Totally. Now, was that a was that a deliberate mantra that you used, or was more just the intention that I know I've done the work, I just have to execute kind of thing?
It was a bit of the intention about knowing that I'd done the work and that I just had to execute, and that was a lot of where I was getting my confidence or competence, however you want to look at it from, was knowing that I had put in all that effort. I had ticked all the boxes. There was nothing that I'd left to chance. And yeah. I'd given myself every opportunity under the sun to go and do what I needed to do.
Yeah.
And the outcome was just going to take care of itself on the day.
Love that. Love that. You focus on the little things, the big things will take care of themselves.
Yeah. It's a bit like trying to do your homework at the last minute too. Like trying to cram once I'm there, it's not going to have any effect on it, unfortunately.
Totally. That was my motto in year 12. It'll all fall together in SWAT vac, but it doesn't quite work like that.
No, you know, unfortunately it doesn't.
Yeah, especially when you're trying to do a cork 720.
I know. And much less stressful when you actually do the prep work.
Yeah, totally. But you still had to control the mind.
Yes.
Right. So you get to, so you've done the, you know, you've done the work.
Yeah.
You've got the intention, you've done the preparation and so forth. And just, I feel like that knowing, right, yeah. is in itself a strength, right?
Yeah.
How did you slow down the mind or control the mind?
So controlling my mind on the night was an absolute minefield. You know, there would have been about, I don't even know, about every minute once or twice where I've just gone, okay, like, I want to win this thing. Like, that's what I want the outcome to be. Like, what's going to happen when I win it? And then I'm like, had to remind myself, be conscious of what was happening with that and be like, you have no control over what the actual outcome is going to be. You can't do anything about that right now. What I could do in that moment was focus on where I was putting my effort and the intent that I had. And that was it. And having to bring myself back to that moment, I mean, it was driving me insane. It was countless times that night, and that was the hardest part of the night for me, was trying to just stay present.
Yep, stay in the moment, stay in the love that. Especially identifying things you can't control.
Yeah.
Including the scheduling. You've got 7 days. then getting back to the intention and the things you can control, which is, what did you say,
my effort and my intent.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just kind of stay there.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Having said that, then when you actually did the last jump, the last one to go, can you remember that feeling?
Oh, man, that was flow state. That's what everyone talks about, you know, that run, everything. Not everything. There's always going to be bits you want to improve. But at the time, I was like, that is everything that I was looking to do here. I came out and I put in my best effort and I did the best that I could on the night. And I was so proud of that run. And when I crossed the finish line, I was like, that is what I came here to do. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's done the job. I'm like, if it hasn't, the person that beats me, they deserve that. Like,
yep.
It was the best feeling ever, though, to have been known that I've gone out, given it my all, and managed to achieve the performance I was looking for. Because, you know, once every 4 years, a lot has to come together at the right time to be able to achieve that.
And totally.
A lot of people have put in a lot of effort to get there. It's not just me. And to have done that for myself and the team around me was a really cool feeling.
Yeah, I want to ask you about your team as well, because I got a funny feeling, like a lot of people, once they realize that they don't have to do everything on their own, where so many of us think that we have to, we have to have the answers and do those things, but no one in this world can achieve anything in this world on their own. We all need people around us, right? So talk me through your team, because that's you talk about your team a lot. I actually think it's one of your strengths, yeah?
Yeah, so that was one of the really key things for me heading into those Olympics, was that I had such a phenomenal team around me who also were ticking every box. It wasn't just me doing it myself. You know, I had my coaches, Pete and Kate. We had strength and conditioning coaches, psychologists, dietitians, mentors. Like, I had people helping me in every aspect of my life to just be the best person that I could be and the best athlete that I could be, which kind of all accumulated to lead to those performances.
Yeah, yeah. And so you've got, how many coaches you got?
I have 2 coaches.
Yep.
So I have Pete McNeil, who's kind of like my head coach, overall coach, coaches me from down the bottom of the course. And we've got Kate Blamey, who's normally up on the top air. And yeah, then I've got my strength and conditioning coaches in the gym. And we've got people everywhere, physios.
And your family as well, yeah?
Yeah, my family, they've been there from day one. You know, as it is with most sports, it's your family that are doing the brunt of the work for a lot of the time when you're young. So my mum and dad have been incredible in supporting me throughout my career and really moving mountains to make things possible and give me the best opportunities that they could.
And they know nothing about the actual competitive side of things, yeah?
Oh, they have no clue. So they,
that's a strength as well.
I think it's been great. So Mum absolutely loves watching me. She'll come to events when she can and stuff. But I'll still ask her. I'm like, oh, so Mum, what trick did I just do then? She's like, I don't know. I'm like, you've probably watched more mogul skiing than I have, Mum, and you've still got no clue. But they just love seeing me happy and out there doing what it is that I love to do.
That's what your dad constantly says to you, doesn't he? Yeah. Just, I just want you to be happy. I just want you to be happy. Yeah, as opposed to winning or achieving medals and so forth.
Yeah.
So as part of the hero's journey, we can get into chapter two, right? And things get tricky for us. And yes. That can happen in our teenage years or, you know, at school, later on in school. And one thing I love about your journey is, yes, you're the best in the world. Internationally, you got an Olympic gold medal to prove that as well. But you've also starting to talk about, well, there's not really a bed of roses and it's been challenges and so forth. Take me through some of that and how you've kind of tackled that as well.
Yeah, so it hasn't been all sunshine and roses, that's for sure. There's been major ups and downs along my whole career, and most recently this last year since the Olympics has probably been when one of the hardest that I've experienced. And I'd heard from a lot of people that that was probably going to be the experience, but until you really see it firsthand, it's hard to grasp it. So yeah, there's been a lot of learning and developing to do and kind of going back to scratch and starting to build myself up. You know, I've just achieved the biggest thing that I've set out to do in my life, and I didn't really want to admit it, but it is a bit like, okay, well, what's next now? You know, I was like, oh, I'm not going to have any problems with motivation or any of that. But no, it's all hit me like a ton of bricks. So, but it's also been a really good thing because it's meant that I am now taking the time to reset and kind of build those pillars up right from the bottom again and build them really strong so that I can keep progressing in my sport and as a person.
Yeah. One of your intrinsic motivations, which I know for a fact is, and it comes from your curiosity, which is also one of your strengths, by the way, is this realizing potential, the possibility. But the downside of that is you're going to put yourself out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
As soon as you're out of your comfort zone, you're going to be in these new conditions. Like, you just won the Olympic gold medal.
Yeah.
You think everything's going to be fine, but that's a new situation to be in, right? And I'm guessing a lot of journalists, or when you're being interviewed, immediately going to expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is the word that you know I hate the most on the planet right now. Right, in terms of what an actual expectation is, but because the cousin to expectations, and the word you'll always hear within a minute of that word expectations is the word pressure.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that been your experience since coming back with all this success of last year? Is having to deal with other people's expectations and so forth?
There has been a little bit of that. Everyone in my key circle has been so supportive of me and not putting any expectations on me whatsoever, and that's been really awesome. There has been, I think it's more of how I've interpreted and getting worried about what other people think of me, and I've perceived that they've been putting expectations on me, or I have listened when they're asking questions and they're like, so you're coming in as the Olympic champion, like, got big expectations of you this year, and how are you handling that pressure? And that, once again, didn't really want to admit it, but I think it definitely did have a bit of an impact on my season this last year.
Yeah. And how have you you were one of the first athletes to download the Mojo course and do it, so thank you for that, by the way.
thank you for making it.
Oh, no worries at all. But take me through, well, A, what led you to kind of lean in and kind of go on that personal journey for yourself, but also what are you starting to learn about yourself, I guess, as well?
A big thing for me going to start and do the Mojo course was getting to the point where I was truly willing to do the work. You know, for a long time I thought I was doing it, but I wasn't really fully buying into it and committing to it. I was a bit more going through the motions. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm ticking the boxes, I'm doing it, but I wasn't really integrating it as like a part of my life yet and fully buying into that. So things, you know, I had a bit of a slump year and things hit a low point, and that was kind of the catalyst for me to go, okay, I really need to make a change here, and started looking into ways that I could develop that. So that was working with people in my team, psychologists, mentors, and picking up the Mojo app was a big part of that too.
And now let's take the foot off the pedal for a moment. To go on the same Mojo journey as Jacara and see the benefits of doing the work, download the Mojo Cro app and find a course that's right for you. And now, back to the episode. You said to me in some of our chats that one of the biggest things that changed your life is when you decided to be honest with yourself.
Yeah.
Which has got to be one of the scariest things anyone can do, yeah?
It's really scary. You know, I'm still pretty good at lying to myself a lot of the time, but
totally.
Being able to be honest with yourself and call yourself out on some of those things that you're doing that you're like, hey, it's probably not so productive. It is like a big slap in the face and it's a really hard pill to swallow, but that's also been when my biggest growths have come about, when I've kind of had the courage to admit to myself, okay, you're really not pulling your weight in this area and something's got to change.
Would that be, if you were going to give advice for other young girls, mm-hmm. you know, going after their dreams and stuff, or other young girls just doing it hard, right? Which, by the way, there's probably a couple of billion out of them out there.
Yeah.
Right? We're all struggling in different ways. We're all on our own hero's journey. Yeah? So what would be some of your advice for them, given what you've learned about your journey?
Yeah, I think like a bit of advice I would give to other young girls is to really sort of lean into those challenging and uncomfortable situations. That's something that I still have to make a really conscious effort to do, because I don't think I've met anyone that likes being uncomfortable. But really leaning into those situations and getting more and more tolerance for handling them and realizing that you actually can handle those things. And
yep.
That's when my biggest growths have come about, and that's been when real catalysts for change in a positive sort of direction have happened for me. And it would be great to see more people embracing that.
Yeah, totally. We talk about when we the stories that we tell ourselves are so often by our bad wolf rather than our good wolf.
Yes.
Right. And when we start to find our good wolf, we start to find these words or these version of events, this interpretation, which is a lot more compassionate and accepting and loving and so forth. One of the exercises we do, well, as you know, is the first exercise that you did in the course was identifying your earliest happiest memory or an early happy memory. What was one of yours? Can you remember what your early happy memory was?
Yeah, my favorite earliest happiest memory is growing up. We spent a lot of time traveling as a family in the caravan up the East Coast, and you know, life was just simple. We just moved from beach to beach, spent time as a family, and yeah, that's definitely a favorite memory of mine.
And if you go back to that little girl,
yeah,
with the family up the coast on the beach, what were some of the words that best describes how that little girl was feeling in that memory?
Yeah, it's pretty emotional to think back to it. And some of those words that come up was...
Happy, obviously.
Yeah, very happy, carefree, adventurous, loved and safe are the main ones that I think.
Beautiful, beautiful. And they can become your competitive advantage, yeah, in terms of showing up from that place today.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I was to then ask you, what kind of human do you want to be today? I'm guessing those same words would apply.
Yeah, for sure. If I could just live by those same, what was it, five words?
Yeah.
I would live an incredible life.
Yeah.
I would be very happy.
Happy, carefree, excited, safe, and loved.
Adventurous.
Adventurous. Yeah, there you go. And then just finding ways to experiences where you can be that human, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't need money, you don't need anyone external, yeah?
Yeah, I think like you were saying, it's pretty powerful to just realize that it is a choice to be able to live it that way.
Yeah, I think that's life-changing for people, in my opinion, when they realize they've got the power to decide how they interpret their life rather than letting the conditions or other people's opinions or expectations of others determine what kind of human you want to be. When you say, this is the human I want to be, and kind of just stay true to her, that's pretty cool, yeah?
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah. One of the most life-changing things for people when they're going on this journey is when, getting back to their bad wolf, when they can identify their not enoughness stories, you know, those times in their life when they might have been, I don't know, comparing themselves to friends at school or siblings or whatever, and as a consequence of that, telling themselves they're not pretty enough or good enough or smart enough or rich enough or whatever it is, right? And when we can, the power is first and foremost just identifying, because once we can identify and acknowledge it, then we can go about, what all of us need to do is develop ways to either accept it, let it go, reframe or forgive, or, you know what I mean, create a generous assumption to either cut ourselves some slack or cut our parents some slack. For you, Jack, because I know you've gone on this journey a lot, what were some of your versions of not enoughness that you, and it's a daily practice, right? It's not something you just kind of go away from, but what were some of yours?
Yeah, I think a big one for me that I've felt throughout my life and a lot at the moment is that I'm not good enough, whether that's in sport or just something that I'm trying to do in life. That's a really persistent, recurring one that keeps coming up for me.
And about 7 billion other people in the world, right?
Yeah, I think that's pretty well felt across the board.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
For me, one of the big ones growing up, you know, winter sport, it's an expensive sport. And
it's got to be one of the most expensive sports.
Yeah, there's a lot of travel involved, a lot of equipment. You're always chasing the snow and comes at a pretty big cost. And I was really lucky that my family were able to make that work for me and give me those opportunities. But growing up, we didn't come from the same kind of background as a lot of the people that I was skiing with. So always kind of felt like I was not enough in that sense of sort of wealth, kind of not as well off as those other people. And that was a big one for me growing up and progressing through the sport. You know, I was spending most of my time with these people. So that feeling of not enoughness in that sense was coming up majorly.
Totally, yeah. Hey, can we go back to a couple of things in terms of chapter two, or just making sense of crucible moments? The post that you put out talking about, while it was a great year in some respects, there was also quite a few struggles and stuff. Talk me through that, because that was an incredibly vulnerable and courageous and powerful post. And I know you got incredible feedback from it, but probably took a little bit of courage to put it out there, yeah?
Yeah, that was probably one of the tougher posts I've done. And like you said, it definitely took a lot of courage. You know, there was probably a few weeks of build up into that post where I'd been toying with the caption and then thinking I was ready to post and going to do it and being like, oh, no way, I can't do this. And just that being vulnerable, you know, it is a really tricky thing to do. But once you take that leap, like you were saying, the feedback that I got from that was phenomenal. And to feel so supported by so many people was such a special feeling, and I'm really glad that I was able to do that and share a bit more of the reality, only touching the surface, but a bit more of the reality of what the season was looking like. Because, you know, with Instagram and stuff, the stuff you share, it can look like one thing. I'm sure it looked like I had a great season, and if you weren't there to see it in person, you would have no idea. But it was a bit freeing to actually be able to share a bit more behind the scenes of what was going on.
Why do you think that post was so powerful for, in particular, the young girls who read it?
I think it was powerful because it is showing myself being a bit more vulnerable and showing a bit more of like the human side, you know, like people look at me and they're like, you're always so calm, so composed. And I'm like, that is by far the opposite of what I am. Half the time I'm out there losing my mind. I'm scared out of my brains. And you know, it's just the front of what comes across can be so different of what the reality is for people. And to be able to share that and put a bit more of a human level on it is a really cool thing to be able to do, to share with everyone, but in particular other young girls too.
I love that. Getting, stripping away the persona and getting back to the person.
Yeah.
Kind of the human being more so than the human doing.
Yeah.
That's got to be a challenge for not only you and athletes, but I could just get teenagers in general on social media in terms of our relationship.
Yeah, social media is a really tough one. You know, you're seeing, for the most part, everyone's posting the best bits of their lives, and you think everyone's got it together and what they've got going is like the best thing ever. And that brings out a lot of that not enoughness, you know. It can really evoke a lot of those feelings.
Yeah. We say that to an athlete, asks us for advice all the time, right? On storytelling or social media, and we say, don't present the best version of yourself that can be photoshopped. Present the best vision for yourself or your values, right? And that could be your relationship with your parents, could be overcoming adversity and being vulnerable, or it could be celebrating a teammate, right? It could be Brit, right? Yeah. Retirement. But once you realize the stories don't have to be about you, but they can be things you care about, they're everywhere. And that sense of appreciation or celebration of those stories, that's when social media can actually be a positive tool and a powerful tool, as opposed to the comparing ourselves and kind of look at me kind of thing, that cult of self. So getting back to intention, which I know you spend a lot of time focusing on intention, the intention of social media, once you realize it can be used in that way, it can be powerful, as you've just seen, when you are more vulnerable and more open rather than being more caring what people think about you.
Yeah, it's really cool to see that side of it being used to do good, I guess you could say, to share stories and inspire other people. And you know, maybe something that I can share can help someone else through a bit of a tough time. You know, I've drawn a lot of inspiration from seeing what other athletes have posted in times that they've been pretty vulnerable, and to realize you're not alone in a lot of those struggles is a really powerful thing.
Totally. I know a really big one for you, Jack, has been kind of stop caring what people think about you and focus more on what you think about yourself.
Yeah.
Right. And literally say, I don't care what anyone thinks about me. You still care about others, but you just don't care what they think about yourself. But you can only do that if you've done the work on what do I think about myself, right? What are my goals and dreams and so forth? But more importantly, what are my values, right? When I hit rock bottom or I really need to dig deep, right? That's when our values come to the core, because we've got to draw down on an energy source to get through us, all right? Talk me through, and it's a work in progress, right? So, but talk me through some of the work around your values or your curiosity towards them, or we can brainstorm together now.
Yeah, a bit of a brainstorm would be good to do. I've done values work in the past and haven't revisited them heaps lately, which I think is an important thing that I need to work on doing better. And I think a little bit of my struggles this last year is I wasn't probably living quite true to what my values are, which is where I found a lot of struggles pop up for me.
Got it. Okay, well, let's brainstorm. So here's a question. What's one of the hardest things you've had to go through in your life?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the last year is probably one of the hardest things that I've gone through, to be honest.
Yep, unreal. Okay, so thinking with that in mind, the second question I want to ask you is, what got you through it? What have you had to draw down on from an energy source to get through the last year? Now, we can spitball words and then we can kind of establish a value that comes out of that. So what's one of the things that's got you through?
One of the things is when I've been able to adopt more of a growth mindset. So stop focusing on, like we were saying, comparing to others and am I good enough at this, and kind of focusing more on what I want to do, how I want to progress, and trying to focus more on the process and the journey of getting there.
Love that. So one of the values could be growth.
Yeah.
Like literally it could be growing, or it could be around potential, you know, realizing your potential, the possibility of kind of going after these goals and dreams. Of those words, does any one of those words resonate more than the other, or is there another word?
I think somewhere? Growth.
Is, growth?
Yeah.
Love that. Love
good
that.
One for me.
So what else, or who else has kind of has got you through the last year or so?
Yeah, so excellence is a big one for me, you know, trying to take that into everything that I do. Family, huge for me.
Yep. So when someone, by the way, says family to me, if you ladder up family, the emotion or the value, it's typically love. Right, so at its core, love has got you through. A sense of growth has got you through. A sense of excellence has got you through. Yeah.
And then I think there's stuff that I didn't even realize that maybe, you know, there's been a lot of resilience in there. You know, it was pretty tough for a pretty long time, and to stick it out and keep trying through that.
Love that. Resilience. And, yeah. Incredibly powerful word, by the way.
Yeah.
Resilience.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else? Anything else that's kind of got you through the last year?
Yeah, I think, I mean, particularly even looking recently, it's like a lot of courage.
Yep.
Is to, you know, kind of face up to those difficulties and be honest with myself about what's been going on. It's been taken a lot of courage.
Love that. I love that. In my opinion, we'll all have different words, right, when we answer these two questions. But for me, if you've got a value or a derivative of love at one extreme and courage at the other extreme, you're going to be okay in life. if we're living in accordance with our values.
Yeah.
And whenever there's any shit in our life going wrong that's within our control, and there's a lot out of our control, as we both know, with pandemics, but whenever there's any shit going on in life within our control, more often than not, there's a disconnect between how we're showing up and what we truly value. So with that foundation, and let's just pick one of them, right? Let's just pick courage as an example, right? If Jacara Anthony was truly showing up from a place of courage, what kinds of things would she be doing?
Yeah.
Or saying or believing or whatever, right? So to hold yourself accountable to showing up from that place of courage, just off the top of your head.
Yeah, I think being honest with myself, you know, being able to call myself out when I am not performing or doing the things that I know I need to do to be at my best.
Yep.
Yep,
love that.
Yeah, facing up to those kind of vulnerabilities that, you know, kind of tend to shy away from because it's uncomfortable. Mm. Don't like feeling uncomfortable, but yeah, being vulnerable is a big one that comes in line with that.
Okay, so they're two beautiful ones around, you know, either defining courage or showing up from that place in terms of behaviours. Anything else?
I think it can take a lot of courage to be kind to yourself, and that's something that I really need to work on. I'm my own toughest critic, and I think a lot of people out there are pretty similar in that way. So I think it takes a lot of courage to be doing that.
Yeah, being kind, kinder and gentler to ourselves.
Yeah.
That's a constant work in progress, isn't it?
That's going to be, well, they're all ongoing, but that one in particular.
I was just going to say that, speaking of which, if you say life is, you know, this beautiful adventure or this work in progress, I think that's a big misnomer for people when they go on this journey, if you like, to make sense of their story, work out who they are, work out what they want, that it's not just a short period of time and then they're fixed and then they go off and everything's bliss, right? Because I think you've made a comment a few times to me in the past that you've got to work freaking hard at this and you're kind of going to work at it every day. Yeah,
it's a day in, day out kind of thing, and it doesn't stop, you know. Like, I was able to go out and achieve what I did that 2022 at the Olympics and win the gold, but things probably only got harder in reality after that, and I've had to really knuckle down and start working even harder on that than I did prior to it. So it really is an ever-evolving thing that's going to be ongoing and is going to play a big part throughout the rest of my life, I think.
Totally. Hey, let's talk about goals and dreams, because I guess getting to chapter 3 of the hero's journey, that's where we spend the rest of our life, putting these goals and dreams out there and then chasing them down, right? With no guarantees, no promises, no expectations, we'll achieve them, but we still go after them anyway, right?
Yeah.
That in itself takes courage, as you know, but talk me through some of the goals and dreams, because I think we've lost that art form as a human race to dream and dream big again, but I know it's been a big part of your tapping into dreams and goals as an energy source.
Yeah, so one to do with the Olympics, I would say the Olympics in Milan in 2026, they're definitely a major goal of mine. You know, I'll be trying to defend my Olympic title in the single moguls, and we're also going to have a new event called Dual Moguls there for the first time. So that'll be the inaugural event. So definitely a goal of mine to be in contention for the gold medal in that as well. And then you're looking beyond that, and there's another Olympics in 2030, not sure where yet. And I would say that's a dream of mine to go to those ones. You know, there's a few more factors that are going to play into that, you know, how my body's faring and all sorts of things. And it's a long way out. So I would say that one's definitely a dream to be going to that one.
I love that. So the next Olympics is a goal.
Yeah.
As it says there, beyond that, it's a dream.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. Sure. Hey, Jacara Anthony, Olympic gold medalist, OAM, world champion. Thank you so much for being my guest on our Hero's Journey Crowe Car Chats. All the best for the next 12 months along your journey. Of all the mantras that you use and the words that you're kind of drawing down on, for advice for other young girls as well, what's some of your mantras that you draw down on to remind yourself of who you are at your best in certain moments when you need to draw down on your authenticity? What's one of yours?
Yeah, one of mine is just, you've got this, you know, trying to have that bit of faith in myself and back myself and believe in myself.
Love that. You've got this. Yeah. Jack, you've got this.
Thank you. All the best. Thanks for having me.
Easy.